music is something that, as a church, we have about as many opinions about as there are people. Some would be glad not to have any music because they don't sing very well, you know, and don't care to sing, and let's get on with the speaking. Yet, there are those of us who think we know something of music. Do I need this one on as well? No? I do need it on? It's on somebody else's recording? Okay, I'll just back off a little bit. Some of us think we know a lot about music, but in the context of our church is what we want to emphasize today. It says in the little synopsis, how to enliven our worship with our choice and performance of music, including hymns and special music. That's the context that we're talking about, because I am a musician and I enjoy a lot of different kinds of music, but some of it is inappropriate depending on the circumstances that we're talking about. And in the context of our church, we generally have at the most four hymns sung, at the most. Sometimes two, sometimes three, but at the outside there will be four. And that is for the group participation. And then on occasion we might have some special music. Someone might play an instrument, or someone might sing, or a group might sing. And that's the extent of it. Now, I am familiar enough with the liturgies of the Catholic Church, the Episcopal Church, the Presbyterian Church, the Methodist Church, the Baptist Churches, and all of those, because I've been in them at one time or another, to know that music is very important to the movement of their services. Very important. An organist or a choir master is worth the salary they pay him or her to perform the task of organizing music months in advance to coincide with certain themes of the year, like Advent, even now with the Easter season. Music has to be particularly selected, so care is taken to make sure that music is not a detraction or a burden or some means by which the music of the church services are derailed or sidetracked. But somehow or another in our church, we have this hymnal, this green-covered hymnal. This is a blown-up version of it for the pianist or song leader so they can see, like some of you, as you get older, your arms are not long enough, like me. This is the same hymnal as a small one. And we pick it up. Oh, it's time to sing. Okay. Well, let's see. The song leader says, let's turn to page, I had it written down here somewhere, let's turn to page 30 and we'll sing all three verses of What a Friend We Have in Jesus. And the pianist is not here today, and therefore we will try to go do it the best way we can. And that's basically it. That's the approach. Now, we have some problems here, of course. We have the absence of a musician of quality who could sit down and play the piano, if you have a piano, because you don't always have one. If you have an electronic piano of some kind, some people who play the acoustic piano are not comfortable playing that. You have perhaps a guitarist, some people here from Indianapolis, and generally their accompaniment is a guitarist, a wife who plays the guitar, I think, and the husband leads the songs. In Las Vegas, in Worldwide Church of God, and it probably still is so, their accompanist is a trombonist. He is excellent. He is a house musician for the Sahara Hotel. And he plays very well. You know, so it works with the trombone. The point I'm trying to make is that we need to take a little bit more care and concern and interest on what it is that we want this music to accomplish. Now, in my years of Worldwide, you had a qualified pianist. Church, as it got larger, more people with talent came along. Nancy Kurtz is here from the Chicago CGI congregation, and she played for years for the Hinsdale Worldwide congregation. And they had others. Jerry Bernardo, who's also with us now, also played for the Hinsdale congregation. I don't know what that says, except that we've got two of the top piano players with us who play for us, and that's very nice. Sharon C., I don't think, is here, but she also played in Worldwide. There are a lot of folk who had talent who used it and utilized it. Now, I don't know what it is that we will be able to accomplish in the configuration that we have, because in some places we are part of the have-nots. But believe it or not, you can sing without an instrument. The first instrument was the human voice. That's what it is. We don't think of it like that. In fact, most musicians or instrumentalists do not think of vocalists as instrumentalists or as musicians. The reason they don't think of that because singers generally don't read music like they ought to. They read what they want to. They don't follow all of the rhythms, but see, instrumentalists are skilled and trained and tutored in reading what's on the page, but singers like to, well, I want to hold that a little longer, and I want to, you know, just in that sort of thing. Well, you can sing without music, can't you? We're going to do that right now. And all I'm going to do is play the introduction, and you're going to start singing. And you already know the words of Onward Christian Soldiers. You don't even see. The problem is, oh, I got to have the book. I purposely didn't have any songs, books passed out. You all know the first verse. You know it. And we're going to show that. What I'm trying to convey to you is that you've got to stop leaning on things that are just not there. If there's not a pianist or an instrumentalist, go without it. If you have to sing a cappella without accompaniment, you can do it. Right? Let's see. Ready? You know why you can do that? You've sung the song enough, you've practiced it enough, that you know it. Now, if I'd asked you to sing Thanksgiving, that's in the hymn book, but nobody sings it. I don't know why nobody sings it, but they don't. It's a nice little tune, appropriate for Thanksgiving. Let's see if I can find it here real quick. But nobody ever sings it because, we don't know that. Well, believe it or not, there was a time you didn't know Onward Christian Soldiers. Page 32 of that hymnal, it's called Thanksgiving. It's based on a theme by Johann Schultz he lived about 1747 to 1800. The words were by Matthias Claudius in 1740. I mean, it's an old piece. But everybody knows it, but you don't want to sing it. We plow the field and scatter the good seed of the land, but it is fed and watered by God's almighty hand. Now, if you practice that, you would get it. And instead of singing, we gather together, everybody knows that. But why not learn some of the other stuff? We want a new hymn book. Yeah, let's get a new hymn. We keep singing these things, songs over and over again. Not even singing the ones in here. Are you? because you're not adventurous enough, you're not bold enough, you're not excited enough about saying, now, is there something left uncovered here that I can praise God with? That's the starting place. Now, we are going to get a new hymn book, by the way. And maybe since there are 150 psalms, maybe we'll have 150 hymns in the book. That's what I'm guessing. But we will have that. But I want you to really think about how we can enliven our services. It's one thing to say, well, our participation in services is to sing these songs, you know, endure singing these songs, and then we get to listen to somebody speak, either by videotape or by live speaker, and then we sing a closing hymn. But here's how it looks from up here as you're leading the songs, song lead, for the congregation. All you see are tops of heads. The person up here waving their arms might as well fall over and drop dead. Doesn't mean a thing. Stop that. Stop. You know, to the children. What page did he say? And they just go. Okay, we finished that one. And it's, what was the next one? Okay, we turn over to the next one. And it's pretty much the same. And the expression is just about like what I look like. Or worse. So the worst ones are the ones who don't even pick this up. You know, what is that? And yet we have the audacity to claim that we come before God in worship and adoration. What in the world does he think? Because he knows what music is. He's surrounded by it. Haven't you read the book? All the activity going on around the throne, haven't you peeked in there to see what's going on? When Handel took that phrase about worthy is the Lamb that was slain and has redeemed us unto God by his blood to receive honor and glory and all that, can you imagine the description? He sat down there and he said, now what music would go with those words? The last chorus of Handel's Messiah and then the Amen chorus that goes after it. I mean, powerful stuff. And just think, that's not even as good as what they are singing in heaven on a continual basis. We are at a disadvantage. God does not help us out in one bit when it comes to music. Doesn't help. There is not one note of music in the Bible. Not one. There is not one key signature or rhythm. All we have are words. We got 150 of them. The psalms are, you know, that was music. We have no idea what the music sounded like. Not one. And yet, the night that Christ was taken, they went out singing a hymn, singing a psalm. We don't know what it sounded like. We have no idea. So we are at a disadvantage. And this is where the battle comes. Well, I think this is good music. Well, I don't know. I kind of like this. I'm a country western fan. Let me get some guitars up here and twang away, and that's what I like. Well, no, I think God is more dignified than that, and I think Bach is what we ought to have. And the arguments go back and forth. Are there varieties in roses? Is there variety in human creation? Could it possibly be so in music? And we make judgments about each other and about situations. I don't think they should have sung that. And we don't understand that God allowed the composer, let a human being sit down. He left it to them to compose, and those compositions have been evolutionary this side of Jesus Christ. Now, I know that most of us have not studied music well enough to know that music is evolutionary. The Gregorian chant that you hear about and the Catholics made famous was based on five tones. I think that's about right, isn't it, Nancy? Close, something like that. It actually was, they were all whole steps. Or something like that, just five tones. And from that they sang all of those. Na-da-da. Da 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 ba ba,
ba ba da ba da 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 da.
That's all, five tones. But that was back in 1100, something like that. 1100, long time ago. Now, at the same time, the Africans were singing things based on seven tones. Interesting enough, when you put seven and five together, you get what? 12? And from that, we get this thing called a chromatic scale. In one part of the world, they were singing things that most of us get bored with pretty easily. In Africa, they had not only the music going, but some rhythm, too. And most of us have a problem with the rhythm part because, ooh, that seems so wild and abandoned and so forth. And yet we read David out there kicking up his skirt to where he's embarrassing himself and his wife saying, look at him. Now, was he an African? I don't think so. You see my point? It's so easy to restrict ourselves and not understanding what it is this thing of music is all about. And so, in coming to our services, there's a song leader generally, and the person does not have to beat a rhythm out, and you can lead by your voice, by singing. If you are a proficient enough singer, you do not have to beat out a pattern. Most of us in song leading have a problem in knowing what the pattern should be because there are different ones. But you should at least be able to establish some confidence and some unification. And that's the whole desire of having a song leader, is to unify everyone to move in the same direction. That's why there's a conductor for the symphony, a director for a chorus. Why? To lead. To unify, to have by everybody cadence at the same time. Now, if you have a good enough pianist, actually, in most cases, this is a song leader. Because they keep the rhythm, they keep it all moving, and they hold it together. Now, if I'm leading songs, I know enough about it that I can do some things, and the musician is generally, you know, going to be able to follow it. But if you're not in that category, it's okay. It's okay to miss beat. Just keep singing the right thing. There are some individuals, by the way, who do not sing well at all, and yet they lead very well because they have taken the time to learn the pattern. The pattern doesn't change. It's the same pattern that Seiji Ozawa uses, or Sir George Schulte, all those big-name conductors. Basically the same patterns, which are learnable. They are learnable song leaders. They are learnable. You can learn them if you desire to do so. If you have the accompaniment, great. If you do not, you can, as we demonstrated, sing a cappella. Now, when you get to smaller groups, of course, you're sticking out a little bit more, and you're a little bit more reticent. And so when you've got a large group, it's easy to kind of stretch out then and do your thing. You can hide a little easier. But now, who are we singing for? Who are we conveying this feeling for? Those standing around us who really don't know as much as we think, they think they know. What are we trying to do? Let's look at a couple of scriptures in this regard to understand that in the Bible, by the way, there are only 15 times in the scriptures that the word music is mentioned. 15. Now, there's a lot of singing, you know, mentioning of singing and so forth, but music, only 15 times. Over in, I want to say this before we turn to some scriptures. There are instances when music is being taught. There are teachers of music over in 2 Chronicles. You can write this down if you want to look it up, 23:13. David recognized when he was establishing the temple worship and establishing that the Levites would be responsible for the worship in the temple, that musicians were going to be necessary. And because the Levite tribe had grown so much, it became necessary to have courses, just like the priests served on certain occasions, so did the singers. There were courses of them. So you didn't serve all the time. in order to allow others to participate. You'll read about that, and they were called teachers. They taught. There are some communities that are known for their musicianship. The Welsh, for instance. There are singing towns. In some towns, there are choirs. I mean, so many folk are in part of the choruses. It's just a natural thing. But in our nation, the society we come from, with the advent of phonograph and the radio and cassettes and CDs, music is made by someone else. And we are less inclined to do it. We are very reticent to let our voices be known, shall we say, because we'll be judged. Well, I've been told that if you sing, if you do it, you get reasonably good at it. But you have to do it. You just can't think of it. It's not a Christian Science exercise. You know, I'll think about it and therefore I can do it. Even with someone who may be gifted with a good voice, you know, blessed from birth with a good voice, it will remain just where it is unless they do something with it. Practice. Those of you who appreciate what I do, I didn't start out like this at all. It came over a lot of time and a lot of practice and a lot of sweat, a lot of agony to be able to stand up and seemingly do it without any fear of embarrassing myself, because I embarrassed myself enough. I had to get up and do it. I'd sang for Mr. Herbert Armstrong one time in a song he liked from the Elijah called O Rest in the Lord. And the gymnasium, I'll never forget this. Don Ecker was playing for me, a good friend of mine, and I'm glad I selected this, and Mr. Armstrong is there, he likes this, and I'm just singing away. It's an alto, a contralto, an aria, but I was doing it as a baritone. And I'm singing away, and I left out a whole line. And Don looked up from the piano and tried to find out where I was, and I was trying to find out where I was, and it was a mess. It was a mess, but I had several of those. So if I could do that up there and not fall out and die, you can make a mistake singing in the congregation. I have made mistakes with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. I made one with the Birmingham Symphony Orchestra singing Porgy and Bess. I came in too early. And so they have these signals that the conductor has where the orchestra has to catch up, skip a measure and catch up. I did that. And I didn't die. You know, the sky didn't open up or the ground. It happens. But we need to get a little bolder in wanting to enhance what it is that we do musically. Now, I was getting to the point about some of the scriptures that are there for us to look at concerning music. I like the way it's called in the King James. It's called joyful noise. Now, I don't think that's an accident, do you? I think it was thought out very well. Now, let's turn first to old Psalm 95. It's a good place. And remember, I told you all of this is music, and what I like about the Psalms, though we don't have the music, there is every possible flavor. When you read these words, you recognize in some of the longer Psalms, for instance, like Psalm 119, there are movements, there are different things happening. Sometimes it's sober, somber, quiet, pensive. Other times the exhilaration, especially when you get into the Praise Ye the Lord, O's. Remember the old hymn, Worldwide Days? And Praise Ye the Lord, O, Praise Ye the Lord, O. Remember that one? And the kids used to think the title of it was Praise Ye the Lord, O. But there are different flavors that you can gain from the music, which means a composer then, like Asaph, could have the luxury and the freedom to put together a piece of music that would express all of the colors of the words. That's why we like Handel's Messiah so much. Took all those different scriptures. He didn't do the libretto. Someone else did. You remember, Nancy, who did the libretto? They wrote the thing in 2 weeks, the music and so forth, but he had a librettist, somebody who did the words. And they work very closely together. I mean, the Messiah in 2 weeks, that makes a whole lot of composers, you know, sit up with envy to think about the magnitude of that work. Anyhow, here in Psalm 95 and verse 1, we read, "Oh, come, come on, let us sing unto the Lord. Let us make a joyful noise to the rock of our salvation." Verse 2, "Let us come before his presence with thanksgiving and make a joyful noise unto him with psalms." You ever wonder why it is that Herbert Armstrong decided to come out with a new hymn book, the purple one? It was reaction partly to a sermonette given by Bryce Clark. Some of those of you who remember him, Bryce Clark came to Pasadena in the auditorium. No, it was in Pasadena Civic Auditorium. He gave a sermonette about how self-centered the Protestant hymns were, and some of them were in our old gray hymn book. You know, "I come to the garden alone. I, all of that. Now, that had such an impact on Mr. Armstrong that he commissioned his brother, Dwight David, to compose hymns based on the theme from the Psalms, with just a few others thrown in. Now, I believe, personally, that Bryce Clark was all wet. I mean, very wet. You cannot read the Psalms and not find David talking about I. And he did praise God quite a bit. No question about it. But to eliminate all of the pensive thinking of individuals who said, "I like this particular expression of God." Thomas Dorsey, who wrote, "Precious Lord, take my hand. Lead me on, let me stand. I am weak, I am tired, I am worn. Through the storm, through the night, lead me on to the light. Take my hand, precious Lord, and lead me on." Selfish? Not on your life. See, the man wrote it when he found out his wife had died from childbirth. And when he got home, he found out the baby had died too. And he sat down and wrote that song. You mean I'm supposed to not sing it because it's selfish? No. It was a limited view. It was an effort to, like I mentioned this morning, of getting, let's get some sermonette material. And that had a deleterious effect on the music of the church. Now, Dwight wrote a lot of good hymns. Not all of them, but then you can't pick up a hymn book in any church and find every hymn in there perfect. They don't sing all of them either. Some of them have 500 or 600 hymns in there. They don't sing them all. Why? The congregation don't like them. They're not singable. There are a lot of problems with it. So we want to make sure that the hymns that we select will be singable for everybody. But if you ever wonder why that hymn book was put together, that was basically it. As well as it states in this second verse, come before God in joyful noise with psalms. And so those psalms that Dwight found conducive to his music were utilized, and some of them very beautifully. I particularly like what he did with the 51st Psalm, or the 103rd Psalm.
"Bless the Lord, eternal, O my soul. Bless his holy sacred name." Very beautiful. Very excellent composition with the 103rd Psalm. And believe me, composers worldwide have taken those psalms and sat down and decided how they can make some music with it.
And they're all over the place. Not only Handel did that, not only Bach. Bach was a church musician, by the way. He hardly ever left Vienna. Salzburg, Germany. He was in Germany. That's where he was. He was a church musician. He had to support those 20 children he had. Actually, it was 10 that survived, but that's a lot of children. And so every week he had to come up with a new composition for church. That's why Bach has so much music. And not all of it was great, but so much of it is. It's a standard by which a lot of people's musicianship is judged, including jazz musicians who love Bach. But that's getting aside. Let's go on to the 98th chapter and verse 4. 98:4, it says, "Make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all the earth. Make a loud noise and rejoice and sing praise. Now, you all thought that the only time that anything was said in the Psalms about praise was 100th Psalm, right? Verse 1, make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all ye lands. No, it's all over the Psalms. All over the Psalms with that kind of expression of praise and adoration. Now, is all music happy and joyful? Not at all. You could not possibly make a composition of the 51st Psalm and make it happy and joyful. There's an occasion when music has to be more thoughtful, more pensive, more contemplative, more meditative, more reflective. And therefore, we should have a broad section, a nice variety of music. What should music be? What music should and can be used? What should it be? Well, I wrote down a few things. Maybe you can come up with some others. It should be dignified. Now, in that dignification that I'm talking about, I don't mean stuffy and stodgy and don't look to the right, don't look to the left, stand up, sit down, fight. I mean, you know, I'm not talking about that. The dignity comes in how you go about the presentation. It should be musical. The music should be singable, because there are some compositions, like, well, even though there are no words to Stravinsky's Firebird, it's not something you go humming. You know, it's just not one of those tunes. Yet many of the so-called long-haired, see my good buddy Don Lawton back there, and I know his favorite composer is Tchaikovsky. It used to be, anyhow. He used to spell Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky for me. But he composed a few things, and you know that Freddie Martin, the old band leader from the 40s, took that first concerto and popularized it in a nice manner, and even old Sinatra had some words. He didn't put words, but there were words put to it, and it was very popular. You know, the piano concerto, Tonight We Love, I think. Tonight we love, dum, dum, dum. You know, a long-haired classical guy wrote that, and you liked it, didn't you? It shows you that you can like a whole lot of things. The cartoons would be nothing without classical music. You understand that? That's the music that's being played. So I'm just trying to open up our thinking and open up our perspective about music, especially when it comes to the worship that we're talking about. Music also should be fitting. In the course of going through a hymn book and having whatever hymns we have, if I get up and give a sermon on one I gave in Chicago, it was on the examination of God. If I give that, I would not want to have a hymn like God's Army. Blow the horn, let Zion ring, for God. That's wrong. It doesn't fit. But many song leaders, well, I can only lead this one, so I can't one, and the pianist can only play this one, and so there you are restricted. Expand, branch out, adventure. It's there for you. The music is in the book. If you have to sing it a cappella, fine. If you have to get somebody from the congregation to help you lead it, up in Lansing, and Grand Rapids, I see the Chapmans here. What they used to do for song leading, they'd have a little chorus, usually three members of your family and a few other folk. They would gather up to help lead the songs, the singing. It made other folk feel a little more comfortable. You can do that. It's not an evil thing. But if you have a song leader, perfect. One that is comfortable, who is adventurous, who can deal with the music as it is. You will not like every hymn that is composed or that's in the book. You won't like every one of them. But you should be careful in choosing those things that are going to advance the service. The music that you select should be thoughtful. It should be positive, constructive, and scripturally sound. And it should also display discipline. You cannot, brethren, And I was going to stop you in the middle of singing Armed Christian Soldiers because, see, in the group situation, there's a tendency, and all of you have heard it. There are people who want to get to the note first. Let you know I know that note. Onward Christian soldiers marching, you know. Wrong. What's the point? So you know the note. Get there with us together. That's why there's a rhythm going. And the notes come at a certain time, at an interval. It doesn't come when you decide, because you want to solo. But we do that, don't we? So everybody around us will say, oh, you have a nice voice. No, wrong. Because there must be discipline. In ensemble singing, and that's what we are with a congregation, an ensemble, you have to have discipline. The conductor, the director of any situation tells the singers, when they have a piece of music in their hand, the music tells you what. The director tells you when. And you must be flexible enough with that. This is not meant to restrict us and by any means, because music making to me is a very important part of our worship service, and it must be loosened up a bit and get a little bit more life into it. And it starts many times with the song leader and the instrumentalists, I understand. But you as a congregation can do your part by disciplining yourself to participate according to the rules of music and rhythm and all those kinds of things that I just won't even go into. Tell you what 3-4 means and 4-4 and 6-8 and 9-12s and all that. You know, most of you would forget it anyhow, so I won't even get into all of that. But I want to encourage you, brethren, to be much more concerned about your music. Now, enough about the hymns. Special music, and who gives it? When I began attending Worldwide in 1966, I had done a lot of singing in high school and in the Baptist choir, soloist, the director, and all that. But when I came in, I didn't know much of anything, and occasionally there would be some special music, and I thought, oh, that's nice. It never crossed my mind that I would participate. Then I found out they had a choir. Oh, good, and I'll see if I can get in the choir. And I got in the choir, and that was fine. It was only after being heard, I guess, in the choir that the director asked, would you be interested in doing some special music? The first thing I did was I'll walk with God. I love Mario Alonzo's reading of that. From the Student Prince, I think it is. And that was the first thing I did is special music. And from then on, moving to Pasadena and all of that, I began to do more and more. I felt that dignity and musicianship and all that kind of thing had to be exercised. Fortunately, in Pasadena, you couldn't do anything else but. It got so bad for me personally in singing some music that I would literally walk off with my arms tingling because I can't, better not move. If I move to the right or the left, they're going to think I'm showboating, and, you know, I mean, it would be that tense. But I did start to branch out and reach down into some of my ethnocentricities. That's just a nice way of saying color. I was a gospel music singer and spirituals and all that kind of thing, so I began to do a few things with those. I took God Will Take Care of You and put it in front of The Impossible Dream. Did Be Not Dismayed, God Will Take Care of You in the front, a cappella, you know, and the pianist just led very nicely into Impossible Dream, and people just loved it. Kermit Nelson came up and said, that's gospel music in it. Said, I just love that. And I said, well, fine. I know that there was a market out there for it, but the problem is that theologically sometimes it's not sound, and so you have to do something with it. There's one, a spiritual called, I Am a Poor Pilgrim of Sorrow, Living in This Wide World Alone. No hope have I for tomorrow. I'm trying to make heaven my home. Now, how can I sing that? Oh, I can change the words. I did a lot of word changes. So for that one, I'm trying to make the kingdom my home. It works. It's a beautiful piece of music. Why should I put it aside? Special music, all ministers, pastors, don't know good music. They don't. Sorry. Whole lots of them I've been confronted with over the years don't know diddly about music. But because I'm the minister, I'm the pastor, therefore I decide. Well, I suppose there's a certain governmental thing there that has to be dealt with, but I don't have the answer for you as to who does music where you're from. I really don't. There's going to be some trial and error. Some things shouldn't be, and some, you know, just might be all right. I really don't know how to answer that for you. I don't have a formula. But I would recommend that those who desire to give special music should seriously think about the impact it has and consider whether it is appropriate to be done. Everything that is lawful is not expedient, and that includes music. There are things that I personally like, perhaps even would like to have heard. Maybe church is the wrong forum for that. Maybe in a program of some kind, maybe at the feast, maybe in another situation it would be appropriate to do. But you have to exercise some restraint, some discipline, some consideration for those listening to what it is that you present. I know that I take some chances. 2 years ago when we were here, and I did a couple of spirituals that I felt were in keeping with the Days of Unleavened Bread, especially with Christ's sacrifice. And I don't know really how it was all received, but it was done a cappella. I'm going to do one for you now. One that I did up in Chicago. This last trip, I was up there for the first day of Unleavened Bread. But the reason I'm doing it for you, to maybe expand your horizons, it just doesn't always have to be Francis Allison's "The Lord is my light." It doesn't always have to be that. There's a variety. It doesn't always have to be classical. There's some lovely country western flavored types of things that can be done. But there's a prejudice sometimes against it because, you know, it's twanging and the voice isn't like Pavarotti's or something like that. That's no reason. Can you imagine? David was not what you might call a trained singer. I don't think so. He was probably more of a John Denver type. Yeah. And yet John Denver could sing with Placido Domingo and it worked. Right? It can work. The thing I wanted to do for you, and we'll end up with what I have to say, I could talk for a long time about music, and we'd just be scratching the surface. I got you to sing one thing. That was good. Please take to heart how careful we must be and how much more energetic we must be about making the music. And I'm working on the hymn book, believe it or not, I really am, and it'll come together. We're going to have some original music. Some of our people have composed very nice hymns that will be singable and everything. And you'll, when you hear them, you'll think, probably your first reaction to hearing some of them was, I don't know. Well, that's what it is with first composition sometimes. You know, that's the response. It's hard to get people energetic behind it, but they will be there. Some of the old favorites, of course, some of Dwight's, Mr. Dwight Armstrong's pieces, and we'll have a nice variety of things for you. But to conclude this session here, I want to sing "He Never Said a Mumbling Word." This was a composition that was composed to be sung a cappella. In fact, probably most of the spirituals were that way, but some people have come along and arranged them where they put accompaniment with it. But this piece speaks of our Savior and what He did. We don't often take time, except at this time of the year, maybe to reflect on that. And because this music is appropriate for the season, I wanted to leave it with you. Wasn't it a pity and a shame?
never said a mumbling word. Wasn't it a pity and a shame? And he never said a mumbling word, no, not a word, not a word, not a word. They nailed him to a tree, and he never said a mumbling word. They nailed him to a tree, and he never said a mumbling word, no, not a word, not a word, not a word. They pierced him in the side, in the side. The blood came a twinkle in the dawn, and he never said a mumbling word. The blood came a twinkle in the dawn, and he never said a mumbling word, no, not a word, not a word, not a word. He bowed his head and died, and he never said a mumbling word. He bowed his head and died, and he never said a mumbling word, no, not a word, not a word.